Hello, horror fans. You're listening to Selling the Scream, a show about horror movies brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. I'm Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob. That leaves us with our nerd. He's my co-host, Josh Take Two Yoakum. How's it going, Josh?
it's going all right. Not too bad. How have you been, my man? How's this week been? Any sense of deja vu on this one?
You know, it does seem like we just did this, but we're back here and doing it again, or for the first time. For the first time, for sure.
Yeah, we made the
first time.
And you know, any other attempts? It's rehearsals, right? That's just.
Yeah, we did a dress rehearsal.
And, full and costume.
Nobody forgot to press the record button.
It didn't happen. I've been doing. All right, though, got the new dog I talked about last time, and you might just heard him chewing on a little something there. He's we're discovering he's like a secret chewer. He doesn't chew on things when you're looking at him. He's like those Doctor Who monsters. So
like a weeping angel, only instead of touching you and sending you back to the past, he chews up your shoes.
He seems to like rubber and plastic. He has eaten like half of a tennis ball, and I have not seen half a tennis ball come out the other side, but things are still moving, so
he's like that dog from Snatch. Let me know if you find any like 8,000 carat diamonds.
Yeah, the only other thing like really that's been going on is Halloween season was over, but watching a movie with my boy, who's a bit of a scaredy cat, and he kind of out of the blue like picked The Witches, and I forgot just how fundamentally batshit terrifying that movie is because it was.
Oh yeah, that's back when they weren't afraid to scare the piss out of little kids.
Angelica Houston's just like, oh, I'm gonna fuck some kids up. Like I'm.
This is gonna be formative.
He
between did shit like that and Large Marge. Which, you know, having seen that movie recently, is not nearly as scary as I remember it being.
Oh, yeah, or the librarian ghost at the beginning of Ghostbusters. That was another one that, like, this is my favorite movie, but there's a part that I have to, like, dip out of the room. Like, there's a part that...
I mean, I watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure a lot when I was younger. And that part of the movie would always fill me with a sense of impending doom. I knew it was coming and there was nothing I could do to stop it.
He did pretty well with The Witches. His only comment was at one point, because we'd watched the trailer first, and the trailer has like a lot of upbeat music in it and stuff, and it makes it just look like this boy gets turned into a mouse, and like that's the whole movie, and not like these terrifying women kill children and get away with it for a really long time. And
right.
He did just say at one point, like, I thought it was supposed to be funny.
No. Yeah, you want funny, you gotta go with what my kid chose with Hubie Halloween.
Oh boy. Oh dear. I do kind of, as much as I don't want to watch any latter day Adam Sandler that's not like, you know, him actually giving a shit and doing like Uncut Gems or something.
Right.
I gotta respect the hustle of just getting paid to go on vacation. Like just
picking a spot to film, taking his best friends with him and getting paid for it.
Like what am I doing in this one? Well, in this one, don't even tell me about it.
It's not even really work at that point. I will say that I am glad that my son is, you know, enjoying Adam Sandler, because I enjoyed Adam Sandler when I was a teenager, right? So I mean it's there, but this is akin to like your child liking the prequel trilogy.
Or like your kid being really into like Pink Floyd but only the like the latest album,
right?
The Wall, no thank you.
Yeah, it's ooh. But I don't know.
Do we talk about the most recent Pink Floyd albums on this show?
Briefly. We dabble. I think typically, though, we do talk about horror movies, specifically ones that Josh here has picked in a attempt to turn me into a fan of the genre. He made a list. And so far, it's not doing too shabby. I think I've liked a fair majority of the stuff he's tossed my way. So we're going to see if that trend continues today.
We're in solid C plus country. Like that's the best you could do, right? Above the average.
I don't even think there are grades above that, right?
Yeah, we're doing, this time we're doing a VHS cult classic. We're doing 1988's Pumpkinhead by popular request from the last episode.
Pumpkinhead is definitely one that lives on in my memory of video store shelves.
Yeah, and that's where it kind of got its audience. This movie was, I think this might be a first for us. This is a based on a poem. Can you think of too many movies you've seen, maybe like Beowulf, that are based on a poem?
Like heroic epics? Yeah, sure. Not a whole lot of just poems popping up in the film industry, though.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, you know, we're really going to film the wasteland. On the, we're gonna make this all make sense.
I think there's not a lot of poems that lend themselves to an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of material.
To a save the cat narrative. But yeah, this was the screenwriter, a friend of his when they were kids, came up with this idea of like vengeance demons and also wrote this poem. And like the demons were tied to like different sins of man. And he really liked it. And, you know, at a young age decided to like, hey, I'm going to option that from you. And then lo and behold, wrote the script and got this turned into a major Hollywood picture.
As you do.
Do we want a little taste of that poem? We get some of the kids in this movie saying it, some of it later.
I would love to hear the poem if you've got it.
Yeah, it's a short one. Keep away from Pumpkinhead unless you're tired of living. His enemies are mostly dead. He's mean and unforgiving. Laugh at him and you're undone, but in some dreadful fashion. Vengeance he considers fun and plans it with a passion. Time will not erase or blot a plot that he has brewing. It's when you think that he's forgot, he'll conjure your undoing. Bolted doors and windows barred, guard dogs prowling in the yard, won't protect you in your bed. Nothing will from Pumpkinhead. So,
you know, it's no 1-2 Freddy's coming for you, but...
I guess spoilers up top. We usually, it's a full spoiler pod. That's the movie. That's the whole thing there. They really nailed it.
Yeah, it's ominous.
But this, it got developed a bit before they kind of struck gold with a first-time filmmaker who, you know, was a veteran of the industry for many years. We got our first Stan Winston movie, one of two movies that he made.
I guess, yeah, he's probably more known for effects work.
Yeah, and boy howdy is he. He got started in the 70s doing like TV movies and immediately won an Emmy for like the first major thing he did, Gargoyles.
Of course.
Worked on just a ton of TV stuff, and by the time he got into film, was doing like The Wiz and did like worked on The Thing with Rob Bottin before designing The Terminator, designing The Predator, and working on Aliens and designing like all the xenomorphs that weren't in the first movie. So
yeah.
Jurassic Park.
it's a murderer's row of hits that this guy has been involved with.
Yeah, and it's like it's crazy because he like kind of flags off towards the end of his career. He died in like the late 2000s, but like comes out of retirement, and the last thing he works on is Iron Man. Like just kind of three generations.
Yeah, I mean he's kind of done it all.
Yeah, it's
fingerprints all over your memories of cinema.
any sort of like practical effect, and especially like great practical effects with both small and large budgets, he knew how to stretch a dollar. I think that's kind of why he wanted to do this one, because he knew with a couple $1 million, he and his students at his school could make something that looked memorable. And I think they do. I think they create a pretty cool monster here.
I'd probably agree with you. It is a little bit reminiscent of the Xenomorph from the Aliens movies, but
yeah, it's a similar silhouette, and that's
kind not of a bad look.
Yeah, no, and it's they really work really well with the scale of it, because it's a big monster. It's not a Pumpkinhead's not a little guy.
No, he's probably like what, like 7-8 feet tall.
Yeah, it's like a grown man on like walking on the retractable the stilts, like kind of the moon shoe, giving them that extra couple feet in there. But yeah, they also like, you know, use a lot of perspective and some pretty cool tricks in this one to
movie magic.
make a big scurry monster with no CGI. But if you're looking for like any drama on the set, apparently there is none. You apparently just chill dude to work for, great time, easy shoot.
You love to hear it. You don't hear it very often, but you love to hear it.
And then his other, he did one more movie, and he maybe at some point we'll cover The Terrifying a Gnome Named Norm on
this. I think there may be one other podcast, maybe two other podcasts that have that that territory covered.
Yeah,
we try not to do bad ones here.
We don't want to walk into a Cruel Jaws scenario again, where I bring you the joy of Cruel Jaws.
Should this be like Gnome 4, Gnome 5? Try to disguise it.
It's a gnome. Is it named Norm? Maybe. I think the other like huge element to talk about with kind of going into the genesis of this movie is Lance Henriksen coming on board, who had worked on some movies that Stan Winston worked on, Terminator and Aliens, was kind of thinking about retiring from acting. And there was a few roles that kind of like convinced him to stick around, like Near Dark, I think. And then this came out like right at the same time. And he went from getting this script and like not really understanding what it was to the scene where his son, he sees the spirit of his son asking him what he did, daddy. And he said that's like when the whole thing turned for him, and he became very invested in making this movie and like provided his own costume and a lot of the backstory that gets used in the film. And
his own flamethrower.
It seems like a pretty cool dude though. Like he came from a really rough background, like kicked out of his home as a kid, got into the Navy, became like a muralist and a potter, and then decided to want to get into acting at 30 and like taught himself to read to do it. He was functionally illiterate before that, and he's carved out this career that he's had since.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, pretty insane. I mean, speaking of carved too, he's also just like fucking shredded wheat in this movie, man. He's
like a weathered piece of lumber that's just been left out. You just know it's solid and strong.
Yeah.
And it's not like the most aesthetically pleasing, but
but yeah, this movie got kind of kicked around a little bit because it was the original financing came from the Dina De Laurentiis's film group, and they were going to release it as Vengeance the Demon, which it's a name. It's I bet I could enjoy a movie with that name, but I think a lot of the joy of this movie, and like maybe what I'm going to try to sell you on as with this movie, is that this is a movie that like it's called Pumpkinhead, and like you rent it from the video store in the 90s and you watch it and you're like, yep, that was what I was expecting from Pumpkinhead.
It's very focused. Not a lot to say outside of Pumpkinhead.
But sometimes if you just, you know, you don't have to have a huge range. If you just hit it right in that pitch though.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying that that's bad. We'll discuss.
But yeah, that name was awful, and they started going under and selling off properties, and this got picked up by United Artists, and they released it, but they sort of half-ass marketed it, and didn't want to release it at Halloween time because their other release at the time was Child's Play, which, like, you know, fair on you. If you think, like, one of those is going to get a bigger market share than the other, like...
Right. I don't want to, you know, impose a stamp of quality on what we're talking about so early on, but I probably would have gone with Child's Play in this situation.
So it gets dumped into January. It gets the January release, does not do well. Until home video, it gets saved by the Blockbuster and other VHS rental stores and kind of takes on a life of its own. I played a lot on cable too. But yeah, let's, you ready to get on into this one?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, like we said, it's not a whole lot of, extracurriculars going on here. We're just going to talk about the movie.
Multiple introducing credits and the credits is always like maybe not the best place to start with.
I just noticed that is basically like the entire female cast.
Yeah. One not listed. Miam Bialik, good old Blossom herself, is one of the hillbilly children.
is this the very first very special Blossom?
We just have to assume that one of the like children who's just out of frame is constantly saying, "Whoa,
whoa!"
Oh man, yeah, we need to do Urban Legend 2 at some point. Get Joseph Lawrence up in this piece.
Do we though?
Introduce the children to the work of a master thespian.
Right, yeah, that's not necessarily something that's going to stand the test of time. We've got to bring it. Expose these people to it.
Also, just the movie starts off cocking shotgun. We start in flashback. There's a family that the Harley family, and we know that there's they're afraid of something. It's like a poor rural farming family.
I'm gonna say this is what, like 40s, 50s, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's probably the 50s, because I think he's implied to maybe be in his like late 30s, early 40s.
Sure.
In the mid 80s. So, yeah, they're guarding themselves because they know something's out there on the prowl, and we see somebody running through the night, fleeing for their lives.
Basically, this entire scene is just dad telling mom and son to stay in the house, lock the door. He's going out to make sure everything's secure, and then he comes in, gets his gun, sits down, and just
waiting it out.
Waits.
But they get someone banging at their door, and we know that there's like a crime. Like I didn't kill that girl. There's also like a scarecrow jump scare here. I don't know if I've seen one of those before. We got big feelings on that one.
Scarecrows have the capacity to be frightening, I suppose. We don't see it a lot, I don't think.
No.
It's more of a like a ghost story or a campfire story sort of thing. You get a lot of, I guess, jump scares, or use them as atmosphere as opposed to actually being the thing that you should be scared of.
Yeah, I mean, canonically, they're pretty scary, though, because we know they are after brains. That's it's been written in. But we see the shape of this thing, or more importantly, the boy Ed Harley, who we're gonna follow into the flash forward, sees that this man who came and was refused entry into their home gets got by something big. We see the shape of the pumpkin head,
right?
Which maybe we can get into that now. Like how do you feel about the Pumpkinhead atmosphere? I mean, we can talk about the looks too, because I think the looks are definitely a conversation to have. But like when he shows up, that like the blue lights and like the swirling leaves and
you get like the chittering insect noises.
Yeah, getting louder and louder as he gets closer. Yeah. I think that stuff really kind of sells him as this otherworldly thing.
Maybe I'm going to unsell you on it by saying that he travels around with his own interest music.
I mean, if you can bring it, if you don't got to hide in the shadows, like I don't think you know, Pumpkinhead's not he's not a Michael Myers. He's not hiding and lurking. He wants you to know he's coming.
No, he's definitely I guess we can just go ahead and talk about this now. There's no real reason to wait. I kind of like Pumpkinhead as a monster.
That's like, a sweet design.
Just everything. Like, the way he looks is cool. I mean, if a little dated, given the time that it's there, but, you know, what they're going for is neat. Like you said, the sounds and the lighting and the way everything looks when he's around is interesting. But just, like, himself as a character is interesting to me. Like, I don't know that we really see this very often, or at least maybe in my limited experience, I haven't seen it very often. Like, a monster with so much, like, personality.
Yeah, it's a really impressive rig they built up for him. There's a lot of, they built a lot of expression into him and then built a lot of movement into the expression. And then they change it a lot because, you know, one of the big things about Pumpkinhead is that it's a revenge monster. So right.
He's doing it in a way to like wring every drop of terror and remorse out of his victims. Like,
He takes the time.
You see villains and slashers and stuff, you know, they'll hide the bodies. You'll have like the jump scare. You open the closet. There's a dead body in there. You rarely see someone play with their victims in sight of their other victims in order to unnerve them.
Just bring them to them. Like, hey, here's your friend.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's you watch there. One of the parts that I thought was really cool. Pumpkinhead grabs a girl, takes her over the roof of the house. They haven't actually seen the monster yet. Yeah. But they see the girl getting pulled over the roof of the house, and they're chasing, they're trying to find her. And the next time they see her, just in a couple seconds down the road, is her dangling, and they kind of pan up, and he's sitting in a tree, like crouched in the fork of some branches, holding her down, and just slowly pulls her up,
holds her
out the side, and then drops her so she dies.
And it's a high shot too.
He could have done that at any time. He waited so that they saw what he was doing, which I think is just—it's just not something that you see a lot of villains in movies do. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because like there's this idea that there's the demons that represent like the sins, and they didn't go with all of that, but he is a vengeance demon. He's right. Yeah, he wants you to know.
I like that idea too, where they were talking about there's a for every evil of man there's a specific demon for it.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting idea as well. But yeah, I know Pumpkinhead as a character is really neat.
And he also goes through like I said, there's different evolutions of him. It's a metamorphosis. Like the first time you see him when they get him from the graveyard, it's just like a little baby pumpkin head, a little like
just a, like a curled up, almost a fetal sort of demon at that point.
Yeah, and it like grows soon after that, but then it starts turning more and more into
Witch has, Henderson. Thing has something she's got to do for it'll be of any use to Ed Harley.
We get to hear his name a lot from our witch haggis. But speaking of Ed Harley, the kind of our proper flash forward in this movie, we do start with this like bucolic him and his son living this simple sort of eternally golden hour life on the farm. You know, from all the brush they're burning, just constantly. Constant fires to keep that golden hour going.
Our introduction to adult Ed Harley is him just flamethrowing the shit out of some weeds on his property. Which I didn't know that's how they got rid of him, but...
Yeah, you know, that's... I knew about burning brush, but I always thought it was like you take it to like a central fire, but you
right,
know,
like you pull it up and then burn it. He's taking the fire to it.
But then he comes home to his son, and they stole the dog from Gremlins.
Driving. Well, the animal's got to have work too.
and it's his son's like, you know, maybe 4 to 6 in that range. Real strong Jonathan Lipnicki energy.
Oh, real, he's Lipnicki-ing all over the place. Oozing Lipnicki machismo.
Which I'm sure now I'm going to get like a million pop-ups on websites that I visit. Like, you won't believe what this Pumpkinhead star looks like today. And it's just like a SoundCloud rapper with face tattoos. Like,
you know, at this point, I would believe it because they always look that way.
And like, I don't know, like, I should know better by now, right? Like,
okay, don't click that link. Your life is not going to be made better for it.
Oh man, but they know me. They this is how, you know, our dystopia rolls out. This is how they this is what they choose to do with the surveillance state knowledge they have.
You speak in the general vicinity of any phone and they'll instantly give you some celebrity that's related to whatever you said and how they look now.
For a movie you just watched. I know, I just, like, it's a new movie. I just saw them. I know what they look like. But all this is to set up, like, you know, our revenge plot. It's this perfect country life where his little boy's making him a necklace to wear all the time. And they run this, like, feed store fruit stand.
Kind of wish Ed Harley was my dad.
Washing your hands, telling you about his grandma. And how her skin was going to disintegrate in his hands, and he loved it.
Felt so good.
That's all, like, legit Lance Henriksen stuff that he poured into this character. The character of Ed Harley for Pumpkin. Which... fucking, this movie sings for it, man. That's like, he's like, well, somebody's got to bring it. And that somebody's me.
He definitely did.
But we cannot stay in this ideal state forever. After they open up their store, we get that scourge of the 80s, motocrossing 20-somethings, teens, young adults.
We're supposed to believe that they are, yes.
To varying degrees of success.
Right.
But yeah, we have this crew. You want to – you need any standouts here? Any folks you want to talk about in this
– I mean
– our protagonists, question mark?
In this group of teens – we obviously have, you know, there's going to be a source of friction. There's going to be our survivors. Everyone else is just kind of whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's really only one person who stands out in any significant way, and that's our kind of our antagonist, I guess. Beside the next most evil thing besides Pumpkinhead in this movie
is
Joel.
Joel, our multiple DUI on probation, got to take his rifle on this motocross trip.
just a wannabe Fonzie, except much more misogynistic.
Yeah, Fonzie didn't really like hit a lot of people. Joel does. Yeah, he's introduced with his girlfriend Kim. They're driving solo while the other folks are driving in the vehicle, the truck haul, and the bikes. It's she's very much got the but you don't know him like I know him.
Oh yeah, she's fine. She's definitely you know, flinching away whenever he moves too quick.
Yeah, no, and then we have two other couples. We have like our like survivors are like, again, our protagonist question mark, Tracy and Chris. They're like our just kind of milquetoast nice yuppies. Like, they kind of look,
Tracy's fine. Both of our survivors are just like white toast.
Well, I mean, Tracy is wanting to like immediately start snapping pictures of the rural bar. Children like roll up like she's in, you know, on a National Geographic expedition, right, or something to the heart of the jungle.
Definitely reads like a tourist in Africa.
This is a camera, it will not capture your soul. Yeah, and then Chris is like introduced by you know, saying that he would have backed her up, but like she just got to it first. Yeah. Like that's the kind of hero
just too
we
fast.
Got. That's the kind of hero we got in Chris. Is like the the guy who gets like immediately knocked down and locked in a closet later on.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he did get clocked in the head with a piece of firewood.
and then just give up pretty quickly.
Like, well, it seems like they locked this door.
Well, we don't want to raise a stink about it. Yeah, he's like a challenging hero question mark for this movie.
He very much gives off the energy of someone who wouldn't complain at a restaurant if they sent him the wrong meal.
and this guy, this is kind of like the second lead of this movie. He'd been in a few other things. I think Jeff East is his name. He'd been in like The Day After. He'd been in a TV movie about Mary and Joseph. And this character also kind of reads like someone who was cucked by God. That's
typecast.
And then we actually have, I think, my favorite too, the other couple here. Unfortunately, they're our first victims. I wish we could spend a little bit more time with Steve and Maggie.
I would much rather have had these two be our final people and the other two gone away. That's
So we have Steve, who's Joel's brother, who is best. Both of these are very prop based characters. He's got a sweatband neck band that he's very fond of and attached to.
He is functionally like a human shaped mannequin being piloted by headbands.
He looks like Bill Paxton at this time, but he sounds like Chris Farley crying, like, just, I can't believe it out here. I can't do this anymore. He gets a very, like, you know,
it's really specific, but I think you're describing something that our listeners can easily zoom in on and see it.
And then Maggie, she doesn't get a lot to work with, and then they very forcefully try to give her something to work with later on. She's like, she's traumatized by the events that unfold, our inciting incident, and doesn't, and is like kind of catatonic, hears something and goes outside, and she has a crucifix on, and we're told like moments before she meets her maker that this is like, this is very important to her.
This is almost like Steve made a choice for her.
Yeah. It's like, can't just be one of us doing prop work. You need to really lean into this.
You're religious. Remember this.
But these teens stop at the store. They're a little, you know, that varying degrees of rude and big city folk, as another family comes in, an older farmer and his kids, that sets a few things in motion at the same, going at the same time. First thing that gets set in motion is that this farmer needs some feed he was promised, and Ed doesn't have it, and he's going to need to like go to the house to get it, to deliver it, if he's going to deliver it by before the sun goes down.
Right.
So he leaves his young child and dog to attend the store full of strangers.
This would seem a reasonable choice for the setting if it weren't for the fact that there were strangers there at this time, like people who were actively shopping.
I did like walk through a dead mall in the recent past, and one of the stores that was still like functional in there was like a
Baskin-Mail.
It was just like a stage magic supply store, and it was being manned by a child. And I just like walked, like that's.
That is the sort of place you buy a Mogwai.
But yeah, this kid's left in charge with his dog. But at the same time, our young people have come here to do some dirt biking, and by God, they are going to do some dirt biking. They are going to.
We're only stopping at this feed stand for 30 seconds to see if they've got beer, but I've got a dirt bike. It's in my soul.
I mean, again, our young, cool listeners might not remember just the motocross phase of the 80s when there was you couldn't walk down the street without getting clipped by a dirt bike.
Before there were Sea-Doos and jet skis, people had to do it on the ground, dirt bike style.
But tragedy strikes. Billy, our young child, chases after his dog, who gets away chasing after a ball, and he gets missed by one extreme sports enthusiast, but not missed by the second. And that one errant dirt bike landing. I kind of wish they would have not even filmed the impact and right. Just maybe had it.
Impact with air quotes.
A dirt bike landing near a child and the child falling down.
Look, either don't film it or actually hit the kid.
Those are your two choices. Jackie Chan would have hit that kid.
Jackie Chan would have been that kid getting hit.
His dedicated team also.
He would have gone full dwarf, put on his Oshkosh bagosh, shoes on his knees.
He really is, like, for all the great things that Jackie Chan does, I think really, like, his crowning achievement is, like, if you just say someone getting kicked in the nuts, the face that I think of, always Jackie Chan's face. Always Jackie Chan's getting kicked in the nuts face.
It's a good one.
Anyway, there's a dead child. We should be a little bit more somber.
Yeah,
I guess.
Show some respect.
our young folks handle this in some different ways.
Right.
Joel and Kim are like they need to beat feet, because apparently for Joel, not again.
I can't go back to prison.
We later find out that he is has struck another child before.
And he's been drinking. They're not going to believe it was an accident.
Just like last time. These square judges. But they decide to leave Steve behind
to be fair, they do try to find
Joel's
father, who apparently did not see drive away. They try to find a phone to call an ambulance, but there is no phone in this shack.
Yes.
And they decide the next best choice is to just drive down the road to the cabin.
There's a phone there. Yeah. And Steve
is all information that should have been relayed by Steve to the angry Lance Henriksen when he comes back and finds his son basically comatose in the dirt.
But instead, it's just like, there was an accident.
Yeah, he does himself no favors. He does not try to de-escalate or explain the situation whatsoever.
Do you think this, like, real honest to God, like, hell glare that Lance Henriksen gives him is like, I committed to this character, motherfucker, and you come in here with this nonsense?
This was a, don't you fucking make me act across from this numbskull. This is, what is this, Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey and Batman?
We'll not sanction this buffoonery.
Exactly.
So yes, it does not go well when Ed Harley shows back up. He takes his boy and he leaves. His boy is not dead at this point, but he's taking him to go get help. Back at the cap.
Point of order, he takes him home.
Well, you know, help from
Jesus?
The mailman is going to come tomorrow. But the our young folks go home, and immediately when Chris tries to call the police, the phone cord is just yanked out of the wall by our own Jason Voorhees, Joel here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that I empathize with Joel. I understand why he's upset. Like, it's a pretty established that he does not want to get in trouble for this, right? Like, yeah. I get where he's coming from. I don't know why he can't help the child and just say, leave me out of it. Seems like he wanted the kid to die at this point.
Yeah, no, it's we have to have our guy to root against here, or somebody that we'll get to his death, because it was like a strangely popular death around this time for a little while. when confronted about this, he gets in a little scuffle and then conks Chris in the head with a piece of firewood and locks him and Tracy in the closet. He's gotten his gun out.
Boy brought it.
Yep, that's I mean,
bring it, you're not going to use it.
You know, to which, like, Tracy is screaming about it, and like Chris's response is like, boy, you're sure scary when you're mad.
So you can't show an emotion, motherfucker.
So that's like the scene that Steve comes back to, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Ed Harley here. His takes his boy home. Billy does not make it. Now he knows,
spoilers.
He knows that the gentleman he's dropping the feed off to knows more about this creature he saw when he was younger. He knows that there's somebody out that, like, further in the mountains who can help him get what he's looking for. They go to this compound. I think one of the things too that's like really cool is that they just how good Stan Winston was working with the budget. Like, they really just had one shed built, and then to make like a compound, they just built like miniature sheds, like in the very near distance, and used like focus and forced perspective to make it look like a whole community of mountain folk.
Huh. I would have assumed this was just like either places that they had just kind of thrown up real fast and put like a facade up, or a place that actually existed. I wouldn't have guessed miniatures to be in play.
And we haven't talked yet about, like, this has like a Southern Gothic feel to the whole thing. It's very like, has a, I think last time we had talked about it, we talked about like maybe like Arkansas or West Virginia, or like you know, somewhere in the Ozarks, right? Appalachia.
It's weird. Recently I saw a thing that it was like a map where every state and what horror movie they have that they can claim to fame from that state. Yeah. This one is North Carolina.
Huh. I don't think it's ever like really established. I think they say Hope at some point, but
yeah, they never really give you a location. It's more of a feeling.
Yeah. It's very California though. It is like, it is exceptionally California.
Yeah. This is scrubby plains with mountains in the distance.
And speaking of which, we also have a returning film location. This, the house that our youth group is in, is the Doyle residence from the Friday the 13th movies, the Friday the 13th Part 4.
So, I wouldn't have recognized it if you hadn't said something.
without the sandwich being formed, without Jason throwing somebody through a window.
Right. Yeah. He's throwing them out.
But he goes to go visit these folks, and they don't want nothing to do with this. They just want their feed. And even when they're shown the boy, again, nothing to do with it. But there's the one kind of like rebellious kid who we had seen earlier, a misbehavior.
See, this very much reads like Gremlins. There's a lot of Gremlins connections here. This is like, he went in to buy the Mogwai. The guy said, I'm not going to sell you the Mogwai. And the little kid comes out and goes, hey, I'll sell you the Mogwai.
I also like that it's got a very, like, Department of Meteors feel here as well, with the that he's bought off soul-crushing magic for $10.
I mean, they're hill people. They're dirt farmers.
You know, and $10 went further back there, and I do get that, too. But yeah, and it's also like very heavily implied that like this kid Bunt, who comes back later, really kind of knows just like location and knows that it's scary. He doesn't know like details. He doesn't know like what he's actually.
Right. He's he's interested in seeing if there is anything to these stories, but it does scare him.
Yeah, yeah. So we get to meet our witch. What do you? This is why we picked this movie. We were doing a witch movie.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Haggis?
She sure is a witch.
65 pounds of makeup on this.
That's a lot. It seems like too much.
It seems like she weighs 85. Like, so
I would have guessed that she weighed 65 pounds just altogether.
But we have our, like, it, you know, she's a crone in the woods. And I one of the things I really do love about this too, is I think a lot of the set decoration in this movie, like a lot of the location stuff is really good. And it's like, it feels very fall. Like this whole movie has like that late October atmosphere to it. It's like this.
Yeah. I like this sort of stuff works for me. I dig the whole vibe of, you know, it's kind of a modern setting, but if you go just a little bit off the beaten path, you're going to find some of the stuff where things are just a little off.
Yeah. And so he brings the boy in. He's got to pay silver, which, by the way, Lance Henriksen went and gathered all this silver himself. Did not say how.
You don't want to ask him how. Never question.
But he has to leave the boy there, and he's sent to a pumpkin patch graveyard and to look for a mound, and he'll know the mound. So I guess, again, like, with the set design stuff, like, I love this graveyard so much. It's so amazing.
It's a graveyard that could not possibly be anything other than the resting place of Pumpkinhead.
It's like these stone pumpkins, like,
yeah,
growing around the tombstones, and this like mesa mound in the middle.
I thought it was just like a massive stump, but that'd be weird.
Yeah, it's the whole vibe is super weird. Like, it's this, yeah, this place is, again, like you said, this is where Pumpkinhead come from. He's gonna dig this little, like, Pumpkinhead monster out of the ground. It's just like a little root.
Yeah, it's like a mummified corpse that's barely buried on top of this thing.
Yeah,
it does seem to have like some worms and slugs on it and things like that, but it's a tiny little almost fetal
and
corpse.
Like dried out and like,
yeah,
like a husk. But when he goes back and they do this magic and they gather the blood of him, the blood of his boy, and Pumpkinhead comes to life, he gets real wet. He turns into a sloppy boy real quick.
I think the things that the witch needed to do was moisturize. He'll be no use to you, Ed Harley, until I moisturize.
Bring back the Jergens and the KY, Ed Harley.
That's yucky.
But like, Ed also like kind of immediately feels that something is wrong too, because he is like doubled over from this and is linked to this thing.
Yeah, like he kind of gets this weird shared vision. Does he pass out here? This is where he passes out, right?
Yeah, he passes out, and when he comes back too, he's like heading back, and that's when the young folks start to get attacked.
Right.
Our first victim is Maggie, who's been catatonic, and she's the first one who gets like lured. But she leaves the house, and Steve goes to go chase after her, and that's where we get this crucifix prop work to establish her thing.
He's the carrot top of horror films.
And like, this is also where we kind of see, like, it's a cool signature move, but they definitely like, they realized with this big old hand, they could just like scoop people up by their noggins.
Yeah.
And Steve just gets just grabbed and, again, yanked up into a tree.
You know, if he can do that with a head, I bet he can do it with a basketball. I'd love to see Pumpkinhead on the Globetrotters.
A slam dunk contest with Shaq in his prime, like.
Well, I mean, back
run the stats.
They had the Globetrotters cartoon, and they had all sorts of celebrities on it.
They had their own cartoon. I seem to remember them only just showing up on Scooby Doo.
I know they guest starred on Scooby Doo, but I think they had their own thing. Maybe okay. I'm wrong.
I mean, I don't want to discount it. There was
maybe he could have just guest starred on Scooby Doo.
I know. I just want to see Pumpkinhead like go to throw like a bucket of like body parts on somebody. It's confetti and it's like laughing and running around the ring.
Exactly. Yeah. And they pull the mask on. It's Ed Harley.
Or like one of the was it the Washington Generals or the Senators or whatever. What they?
It would have been the Generals. Yeah.
Yeah. They try to cheat and Pumpkinhead just tears them in half.
He gets a uproarious round of applause and laughter from the audience.
But if Maggie gets her, we get that established crucifix because Pumpkinhead pins her down and carves the cross on her forehead with his nail.
Yeah, this dude, he wants to perform. He's got a stain.
And again, like when he comes back to get like the rest of the folks who are in the cabin, he's just presses her face up against the window.
He just shoves her until the window breaks and she kind of impales herself. But yeah, he puts this is another thing where like Pumpkinhead's character work, where the two are, they're sitting like in the doorway, they're like, they're freaked out, they're worried, and then he just kind of lifts her body up, like, lifts her head up, the kind of some puppet work where he's just kind of using her head like a periscope, like, looking around, getting their attention.
Little sock over her head or something.
here's a question. Like, having watched the whole movie and knowing what we know about what happens with Pumpkinhead after the events are over with, do you think that every Pumpkinhead is a little bit different and they bring a character of the person that they are before?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what the sequels kind of go there. I mean, sequels aren't, they don't do it well, but they go there. I think I neglected to mention that Pumpkinhead also is like heir to, they made a Doom clone of Pumpkinhead that's considered the worst Doom clone ever made for PC.
That's wild.
It starts with the witch, and then you're just in a dungeon shooting magic at Pumpkinheads while like floating eyes look at you.
at multiple Pumpkinheads.
Multiple, yes.
All right.
But there is like some character work here where like Joel never becomes a great guy, but like he gets talked into letting them at, like the people he's captured out of the closet and like letting them go for help.
You know what? I honestly feel like he it's not enough to redeem him.
No,
I don't think. But I do believe the change of heart that he has. I think that, you know, in a movie where he wasn't impaled by a gun. you know, in other words, a movie that wasn't Pumpkinhead. you might see like almost a little redemption arc for Joel. I believe him when he has his little, you know, I've got to own up for my mistakes little speech.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were thinking like maybe at this time, like a Sean Penn as Joel, like there's no Pumpkinhead. It's just his redemption arc.
I believe that there is a reality where that story is something that could happen.
Okay. But, you know, now they know that there's a thing after them.
they have seen
the thing. and Joel does try to fight it off. He grabs just a handy machete they had about.
I also love how much Pumpkinhead is just like, I'm just going to walk in that house and grab a girl. I don't need them to run out into the woods. I mean, if they go, I'll chase them, but they're in there. Let me just go get one.
Let's just grab her. Let's just grab it. Yeah, he takes Kim off, and this is where we see him, like, pull her up and do the drop, which I think is, what like, maybe my favorite shot of the movie. I think that's the scene, because, like, the test audiences that they initially showed this to, where they thought it was going to be a bigger hit, apparently the reaction that they got was like, oh, we've made the next Terminator. We've made the next Predator. And I think maybe reaction to this scene might be where you would think that, because it is a I cannot state enough just how impressively high Pumpkinhead took this moment.
No, yeah, this is I like Pumpkinhead as a bad guy. The character of Pumpkinhead is pretty fucking awesome.
But while this is going on, again, because we're cross cutting, Ed Harley is having like these visions too, and he's like,
yeah, he's like seeing from Pumpkinhead's point of view. He's seeing what's happening to the kids, and I feel like maybe he's not having so much of a good time anymore.
Yeah, and this is where he sees the vision of his son rising from the dead and saying, "Daddy, what did you do?" So he's now like trying to help them, and it like creates this weird thing, because I think one of the sort of we get it a little bit with Bunt too, where it's like Pumpkinhead goes after like the folks that he's after, but anyone that gets in the way, also yeah. Fair game.
Also, that's why at the beginning the guy locked the door and wouldn't let the man in.
Yeah, because it's and Mettlers are also added to the list.
Yep, our heroes, you know, they're in the little shanty town where the hill people live and knocking on doors trying to get help or information or anything, and they won't yeah. Won't let them in, won't help them, won't talk to them, just say, hey, just go about your business, we don't want any part of this.
Yeah, that's a good chunk of the last like third of this movie, is just them running from place to place and people going, nope,
no thanks.
Please. But Ed Harley reunites with like he's able to find them because he knows where they are. He knows where Pumpkinhead is. And they try to fight him off like with normal means. They shoot him with a gun, and that's when Joel's just like, yeah, got him. Game over. Pumpkinhead defeated with a gun.
That's what the gun's for.
This was like in a few movies at the time, somebody getting a gun shoved through them. I think this is like a very brought to you by cocaine idea of like, you know how guns are for shooting, but they have like mats, right?
I like this.
It's nasty. It's I mean,
you say it was in a lot of things. I don't think I'd seen it before. He just kind of holds them up like it's like a baton in a parade. Just like da 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 da.
But yeah, they keep fleeing, they keep running, they end up running into Bunt, who's like the only person who's going to offer them aid, because he wants to see it.
he has a scene in his bedroom with all of his siblings, and the oldest sister wakes up and says, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm going to go help these people. I got to know if this is real."
Yeah, you know, he provides a bit more exposition and context here, and we end up like after a lot of chasing scenes in this like church. I'm gonna add this to the list of like impressive set design that I want to just highlight here. Did this stand out for you as well? This like a church that's lit like in Cenobite vision when Pumpkinhead shows up with.
Yeah, I mean it's.
Smashing stuff with the crucifix.
Yeah, you basically just have the remains of a church that was, I guess, unsuccessful. I hope it was unsuccessful, man. They didn't just put this much of it up and decide, eh, this is good enough.
Spirit Halloween now. Yeah.
It's like 2.5 walls and a doorway. They managed to get the cross up.
It's the Church of Steve.
Yeah. But the boy leads him here because he thinks, you know, this might qualify as holy ground. And if this thing is a demon, maybe he doesn't want any part of holy ground.
Pumpkinhead does not give a fuck. Does not care.
It's true.
But there's like a lot of like scuffling here. And then we get to like our next thing where I think this is the thing that some people have some issue with this movie. I buy it because I think he's got like prior knowledge from either who he was or just from Ed Harley, but the Chris trying to use the dirt bike to get away
Right. They go down to the parking area where the cars and the bikes were and find that the cars are flipped over and one dirt bike is just like propped in between two trees.
Yeah. But it's been left there as bait and Pumpkinhead's just holding up the bike chain like,
you see, I can understand why people would have issues with it, but to me, he's already shown enough character that this is totally within the realm of believability for me.
Ooh, what if in the novelization we'd find out that like this Pumpkinhead was actually like a 70s motocross guy? just serendipity.
Right, I mean, we don't know how many pumpkin heads there have been.
Pumpkins heads.
Pumpkins head.
But he picks up Chris on the bike and throws
him. One hands him, just chucks him.
But like a lot of this final act is just sort of also built around Ed realizing that like they are linked because now Pumpkinhead is starting to look more like him too. He's got like the Lance Henriksen face, and when he like earlier when he had gotten injured, that's the only time Pumpkinhead really reacted to getting hurt. He pokes himself with on a pitchfork, and that's
not intentionally.
Yeah, that's how he finds out, is he just fucking blind walks into a pitchfork.
They're at his house too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But he finally like realizes that he's gonna have to, like, if he's gonna save these kids from the revenge that he enacted, if he's gonna save his own soul from killing these kids who, like, you know, it was an accident or had very, even if it wasn't, like, had various degrees of
this culpability was too much.
Yeah,
may so have been an overreaction.
So he tries to shoot himself and really just
the witch tells him there's a powerful price to this kind of magic.
And yeah,
until right here at the end that he really understands what the cost of this vengeance is going to be.
Yeah. But he's not entirely successful. So we have like our showdown where.
I don't know how you fuck up shooting yourself in the head.
I mean, it happens. It's certainly. Is a thing that has happened before.
Are you insinuating this is like you know, like any other horror movie where you drop your car keys when you're trying to get in the car because you're being chased?
Or he's just like, I know I'll shoot if I shoot myself in the head, it'll work, and he just points it right to where his earlobe and like up and out, like.
He's trying to outsmart him like Fight Club.
Before, you know, he can be finish things off here, Tracy's able to actually shoot Ed and kill the monster.
Yeah.
So she and Bunt and Chris survive, and there's a really cool like ending part here where you think like everything's done, and it kind of is done, but like the body bursts into flames.
Right.
Kind of screwed them when they wanted to make sequels, because that that was the suit. That was
the actual suit. I mean, there's something to be said for just going for it, right? Yeah. They're committed.
Committed to this bit. But like you had alluded to earlier, there's like the whole part of Pumpkinhead where it's the he becomes the next Pumpkinhead because Haggis takes out his body and buries him, and you know it's him, even though it's the Pumpkinhead thing because he's got the necklace on.
The shitty necklace his kid made him.
Dumb fucking necklace. Fucking idiot.
It looks like the fucking, what's it, the Pip-Boy guy from Fallout. The blue and yellow.
A little bit. It's just kind of like a little stick figure, man.
Yeah.
But I think this is a pretty fun one. Is there other stuff you wanted to like dive into? I feel like I kind of sped through that third act, but the third act in this one always kind of like runs together a bit for me. So
I think other than reiterating that I think the character of Pumpkinhead and the way he acts is cool. I think I've said that a couple times. I don't need to hit it again.
This
movie is pretty straightforward. I think he did a good job of talking about it.
So I guess that brings me to the sales floor here. I think this is like the perfect movie for like 12-year-old sleepover parties. It's got enough gore in it. They feel like you feel like you're getting away with something. You've got a cool monster. But it's also like goes down pretty easy.
Absolutely the sort of movie I could have seen myself at that age seeing pieces of in the background of like a Halloween party that I had gone to. Because I saw bits and pieces of Pet Sematary. I saw bits and pieces of Child's Play.
Yeah.
There's probably some Friday the 13th movies that I've seen bits and pieces of in that exact situation.
Yeah, I think this movie, that's kind of where it really excels. And I think it's a good one of those. I mean, it's you got like a creature made by arguably the greatest special effects creature guy, if not greatest, easy top three, top five.
Right. He's going to be in that discussion.
Yeah. And he's letting his students like run all the special effects stuff. But, you know, it's the people, it's his studio.
Yeah.
It's the people he trained. Taught him. Yeah.
You're going to get some variety of his excellence there regardless.
Yeah. And you know, if they really brought in like a dog shit design, I'm sure even though he's a very nice guy, was a very nice guy. Apparently he probably would have said like, hey,
that's dog shit. Do it again.
But you know, it's a really fucking cool design. I did see like one criticism I sort of agree with, because if you look at like the a lot of the movie posters and stuff and like the later sequels, they usually like make something pop on them a little bit more, like the eyes or like more detailing, like an eerie glow to parts of the skin or something.
Mm-hmm.
He is kind of like a monocolor monster for the most part.
Yeah, he's just kind of like pale yellow.
I don't think it would take much. I think like, I don't know if you've seen Attack the Block. That might be one we could do on here, but like those monsters with their glowing eyes, like really makes a simple design like stand out really hard. But
I think I've seen it, but I know what the monsters look like. They're just, yeah, like pitch black except for the bright blue glowing.
Yeah, like they look like fry guys that are pitch black with blue eyes.
The only thing you see is like their eyes and their teeth when they open their mouth.
But yeah, I think this is a gem of this kind of movie. That's, I think, the late 80s, early 90s, you were kind of moving a bit more away from slashers and more into like this, back into this sort of like creature feature type horror.
Yeah.
So I'm curious where it sounds like the monster was a winner. I'm curious if the movie was for you.
Oh, this is a sale for me. I like this movie a lot. And it was in large part because of the creature.
Yeah.
And the story didn't try to crawl up its own ass. It was very streamlined. It was simple, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in this case.
Yeah, it's a relatively straightforward, like you were saying earlier, like a campfire tale or like a Southern Gothic horror story. Like it's pretty, yeah,
and that stuff works for me. Like I said, yeah, that is a thing that I dig. So I mean, between that and the creature being awesome, both in design and you know, characteristics and the character work, I think the only thing that really would have improved this for me is if I had given any amount of shit about the protagonists. I liked Ed Harley, I liked Lance Henriksen, but the kids could have been replaced with anything.
Yeah, and it's a weird needle to weave in that story where it's like you've got your most interesting character and your most interesting actor, but like he's also kind of the bad guy, and you need to like
I think this would have been a better movie, and again, I did like this. If the teenagers were, they could have all been just like complete and utter caricatures, right?
Yeah.
But we focused more on Ed Harley and Pumpkinhead and the connection between the two, and we didn't spend very much time with the kids at all other than the deaths.
Yeah, or like even if it was like people that he knew or something that he was getting revenge on and realizing like,
because they were by far the least interesting part of the movie.
But I mean, you get Steve there. I mean, we're gonna move into crispy territory, and there's a real strong temptation to give it to my man Steve, but I think I would have needed just like a little bit more out of him. And he's also up against Lance fucking Henriksen, man, our best Lance, our best one.
Yeah. I think The Witch is a pretty strong contender as well.
Yeah, no, she's good. I do think it's kind of like a you know, monster situation where it's like a relatively younger attractive person just saddled as like with old unattractive makeup, and like it's like
this. Sure, I think she does a good job.
Yeah, no, she does. She does fine. She's a cool witch. I mean, that's part of why I tossed this one in the hopper for us. Is
I feel like you could give it to Pumpkinhead. I wouldn't blink. Give it to the monster.
Now I just want like an award ceremony like shot where they cut over to like the table and Pumpkinhead's in a tuxedo. Like, what?
He's just got the bow tie.
And it's like big clawed fingers crossed holding him up. But no, I'm giving this one to Lance, my man.
Easy choice. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Next to Time. Sure. So maybe doing this a little bit out of order because it's the next movie we're going to do, I feel, associate more with like late summer than fall times. But this is one I've been wanting to do for a while. And I think a good juxtaposition after we do a movie like with these teenage characters and some of the slashers we've done where there's a certain morality. We're going to do a movie that kind of subverts that a little bit. We're going to do It Follows from a few All years right. back. Looking forward to talking about this one with you. Yeah.
Now, this is one that I have seen parts of.
Okay.
I think I actually sat down and watched half hour, maybe 45 minutes of.
Turned it off in disgust.
I think what happened is I had to leave before it was over with, and then I never came back to it. It wasn't, I'm not going to give you any sort of indication of whether or not I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Or not. But it wasn't, I didn't turn it off because I didn't like it.
Got it. Okay.
It didn't repulse me or turn me away. I never came back to it because I forgot I was watching it.
Well, let's, before I move on to businessy stuff here, you got anything you've been doing, you've been digging on, you wanted to shout out?
No, I mean, based on the time that we're recording this, and it's just kind of an evergreen rule is you get out there and vote. I don't care who you vote for. Just participate in democracy, please.
Well, I mean, I care who you vote for, but yes, the more
selfishly, I have opinions about who you vote for.
Yes.
But I want you to go out and do it.
I will just say that the outcomes I prefer are probably easily guessed from anybody who's listened to more than like two or three episodes of the show. And also like when more people turn up to vote, I tend to win. So, yeah, please.
It's a win-win. Just do it.
Yeah, I've been watching a little bit of the, Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosity show on Netflix.
How was it?
Pretty good. It's, the first two I thought were all right. They were good enough to like keep me going. And I just watched the third one, and the third one is really good. And it's like a whole different, like the first two were very samey to me, and the third one was like, oh, okay, they're gonna do some different things on this show. It's pretty good.
Maybe I'll check it out. I haven't really been watching any TV that's been notable.
Okay. That's a first world problem. Not enough good TV.
There's tons of good TV out there. I just haven't been watching any of it.
So let's talk a little bit about business stuff. If you want to reach out to us, please, reach out to our email, sellingthescream@gmail, our Facebook group. We are, accepting folks in there. You just got to answer some questions from a robot, and, they tend to post, new episode stuff there and just dumb memes, and some other folks participate too. And it's a neat little area. Come hang out with us. We're on Twitter at Scream Selling. If there's going to be a Twitter by the time this episode drops, if a petulant man child doesn't destroy,
take his ball and go home. Take the ball he spent several billion dollars on and leave.
If you want to look at this ball, $8. $8.
Good ball.
Yeah. No, it's a, I mean, I guess I, we lived through like the crash of like MySpace and, but that felt a little slower. It felt like you still knew people.
This, yeah, this does seem to have gone from 0 to 60 rather fast.
I mean, I guess when you destroy all your sources of income, like immediately, and then just start asking people to pay for something they've gotten for free for a decade going on.
You know, genius. Yeah, don't, he's very smart.
If you could please leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. iTunes does drive the most traffic. It does say here in the iOS agreement that there's a slight additional cost if you want to post a bad review. It's just 6 silvers and some blood.
I was gonna say, it's a powerful cost.
You get a check mark next to your name to be a verified bad reviewer, and a different colored check mark to be an official bad reviewer.
There's tears.
But yeah, until next time, we're going to do It Follows. Look forward to doing that.
Sound good to me.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you.